Hello and welcome to another episode of The Gray Native. It's a loose discussion of travel, adventure, diving, driving gear, and most certainly watches. This is episode 371, and it's proudly brought to you by the always growing TGN supporter crew. We thank you all so much for your continued support, and if you are listening to the show and would like to support us, please visit thegraynative.com for more details. My name is James Stacey, and I'm joined, as ever, by my friend and co-host, Jason Heaton. Jason, how are we doing?
Well, I took the winter wheels and tires off the Prius yesterday, and
we did the same.
Lo and behold, the forecast says there's some snow coming this week, so you know it was inevitable. Yeah. It's like I also put away my Red Wing ice cutter winter boots a couple days ago, just tucked them in the closet, you know, thinking, okay, no more cold, icy walks. But I don't think there'll be much ice anymore. Mm-hmm. But you know, just this is a winter that just keeps holding on. I mean, we're into April already, and still hanging on. But other than that, yeah, I'm doing fine.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. Yeah, we took the winter tires off as well. So we've got a bigger drive coming up in the next little while. Hopefully good weather across that drive. We'll see. You know, you never know. It's definitely preferable to have them, but it doesn't make sense to wait forever with them on.
Yeah.
Look, we've got an exciting show. Part 10, the final 2025 Slack Q&A. We're still getting questions on Slack asking, hey, where's the thread to offer up a question? So we're going to finish this. And then later in the month, probably towards the end of April, after we get past new watch season and the Megasode and the rest of it, we're going to launch the 2026 round. But we've got a bunch of stuff to kind of get through in terms of housekeeping. The first one is for the Watches and Wonders TGN show schedules. So this episode will come out Thursday, April 2nd, and then there will not be a new episode for the 9th or the 16th. It's simply too busy. And then by the 16th, we're in the middle of Watches and Wonders. We will have our annual post Watches and Wonders Megasode for April 23rd. So that's the schedule coming up for this. And, you know, because we don't commonly take a 2 week break, we do have something kind of special to offer. And, you know, I'll let Jason describe it, but a huge thank you to Jackson B and for Tom Place for setting this up. Jason, why don't you walk people through what they can do for some entertainment in our 2 weeks off.
Yeah, well, you might remember at the beginning of the year, we did, was that last year? It was last year that we did the draft.
Last year.
You might remember at the beginning of last year, we did the kind of the tournament bracket emulating the March Madness basketball tournament shenanigans that people take part in every year with regard to favorite watches. Well, this being the 10th anniversary of TGN, going back to 2016, it has been proposed and bandied about on Slack that we have some kind of a selection tournament for best episode of TGN, which is there's some stiff competition. We're on episode 371, so there's a lot to choose from. And the intrepid Tom Place, who is well known, he's TGN legend, of course, and has been on been on the show a couple of times. And Tom is an inveterate TGN listener. He goes back and, you know, for his sins, he listens to old episodes over and over and has put together a good list of what he considers top episodes. I believe he's at 64, just like, you know, like a tournament bracket we'll have. And then working with Jackson B, our wonderful moderator on Slack, Jackson put together kind of a voting bracket system using Google. A Google Forms that you can go in and vote and kind of work through the different rounds and different categories of episodes. And that will hopefully tide people over during our 2 weeks off. This is specifically for the crew. So it's going to be something that we're hoping will spur a lot of discussion and fun on the Slack while we're not recording episodes. And so I guess we would just encourage people to keep an eye on the Slack. Jackson's going to be kind of overseeing a new channel that's going to be set up temporarily for running this tournament, and there will be a link there for this Google form where you can go in and vote, and it'll just continue to kind of whittle down until there's a final round, and we'll see what the best episode in the majority of people's minds has been. So thanks again to Tom and for going through all the old episodes and putting together that list, and to Jackson for building this form and kind of spearheading this effort. I think it's gonna be a lot of fun to watch.
Yep, it looks like we'll hit the starting bracket April 2 through 5, and by the 16th to the 20th, we'll be into the final four, and then the 23rd to the 26th should be the championship. I don't know. I don't really know what to expect. You know, I think Jason and I will have to do some soul searching if, you know, the top episode is episode 25 or something like that.
Yeah, right.
That's you know, true. Maybe we peaked early. You never know.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that. Yikes.
But if anything, it'll be a suggestion for maybe where we should be headed. So that'll be great. And yeah, a huge thank you to Jackson for putting all this together. I know it was a massive lift having done this for a much smaller bracket in the One Watch tournament. Jackson's really put his heart and his soul into this, so we appreciate it.
I think we'll have to recuse ourselves from taking part in this tournament. I think we, you know, one of us can put our finger on the scale, so to speak, and, you know, sway things one way or the other. I think.
Look, I mean, look, man, I've got the memory of a goldfish. This was probably my favorite episode. It's all one big episode to me. We've just cut it into a few hundred pieces, right? But look, with that said, we have even more to announce. I promise we'll get to the meat of this show. But we've got another appetizer here with the Vancouver and Montreal Timepiece Show. You can get the tickets at timepieceshow.com. That's the end of April and the end of May for Vancouver and Montreal, respectively. We also now have a locked-in plan for the Marathon Roldorf TGN Round 2 Second Annual Party at Roldorf & Co. It's going to be Saturday night instead of Sunday, a little bit easier for folks to come in who are leaving Sunday evening from the West Coast there. So that's going to be at 7:30. RSVP is required, and you can find the link in the show notes. And if you're on the Slack, the link has been on the Slack for the last couple of days. So be sure to get in there. It's a pretty high threshold for the RSVP, but it's just something that'll allow us to understand and run a wait list in the event that we get a bigger response being Saturday than Sunday. Last year was an absolutely incredible event. We're going to have some great local beer, some wine, some fantastic food, obviously some NA options and waters and all that sort of thing. But really, it's a chance to come and hang out, spend some time in Roldorf's great space, and connect with the TGN crew and the folks from Marathon. So it's something we always look forward to, and it's going to be a highlight of my April, what will be a pretty exciting April, I think. I'm kind of all over for the next little while.
And you'll be leading the crew in sea shanties at that party, right?
Well, hey, anything's possible. You know me, I love to sing in front of a crowd. How about you, Jason? What have you been up to?
Yeah, I mean, we had, you know, this springtime is sort of coming in fits and spurts, and we had a really warm day yesterday. I was running around the lake in shorts and a t-shirt, and it was almost too warm. And then on Sunday, I was out on my bike for the second time this year. We've had a couple of kind of spiky, weird warm spells, and now we're back to the cold. So not much new to report here, other than the fact that 2 weeks from when this episode goes up, I will be in rural, rustic British Columbia, competing in this Defender Trophy North American selection round. And I've learned that at least three other people that I know, that we probably all know, will be competing as well. Of course, Brock Stevens, former Navy diver, Deep Sea EDC on Instagram. Brock will be competing as well in a different, I think he's there the 2 days after I'm there. So there's three waves of this. I learned recently that Albert from RDX makes some great, you know, watches and straps. Oh, nice. He's in it as well. And then Matt S. from Slack also reached out and said that he's competing as well. So we'll definitely be keeping an eye out. I'll have to, whatever I'm wearing, and this is my next little topic here, in terms of a watch, I know this is the most important question of the whole event, which watch to wear. I'll be wearing it on a TGN NATO. So we'll definitely have to look around for others in the group to see if anyone else is wearing one too. But yeah, just sort of building up to that, prepping for that. I mean, 2 weeks is not a lot of time. And, you know, of course I'm an experienced Defender driver, but mine is so old and analog. And we'll be competing in new Defenders. And there's a few things that they put in the prep document in terms of familiarity with the vehicle. And I have no experience with the new Defender, much less any modern vehicle. So I've set up an appointment this week to go to the Land Rover dealer in town and get kind of a general orientation and walk around and test drive and kind of familiarize myself with the new Defender. I kind of thought that would be a good idea to do before I jump in cold, and so I don't look like an idiot even trying to find where to start the thing. so that's kind of where I'm at now. And then, like I said, I'm trying to figure out which watch to wear. I've been kind of test driving a few different pieces and have kind of a short list. You know, if people want to suggest, I'm not going to do a poll or anything like that, but Elliott Brown kind of makes sense. Kind of a rugged watch. They have a Land Rover connection. Vertex, I've got this MP45, and there's some need for a stopwatch function, they said in the prep document on what to bring. So that's a factor. The CWN1 is kind of a no-brainer, a quartz kind of lightweight do anything piece. FXD, Zen 144, like kind of spoiled for choice, but it's I'll probably make just a game day decision, like before I board the flight to Vancouver and figure it out. Any help there, James?
Like a CWN1, I think. I think it's a CW. You got to rep. Or you know what? Is that like wearing your own merch? I don't know. maybe it's not cool to do the CWN1.
I don't know. Yeah.
The thing that would be important to me if this was me is I would be picking a watch that, regardless of the outcome of this experience, mm-hmm. I could look back on both photos and videos and whatever media comes out of it.
Yeah.
But also just as my memory is like, oh, like, is this a watch that I'm going to have in 30 years? Because I can say, hey, I wore that when I competed in the Defender Trophy, when I won the Defender, whatever happens, right? I think that would be, I'd work backwards from there. So in my mind, like the FXD is a natural because that has been such an important watch to you for the last several years.
Yeah.
And already has some backstory and some diving built into it and that sort of thing. Yeah. So, you know, that the CWN1 obviously has the crew connection and that sort of thing. So that's where I would lean. You know, if it was me going on this, I would be tempted to do a CWN1 or the Pelagos 39. But then depending on the needs, you know, you walk your way into an Aqualand pretty easily, right? If you need a chronograph, if you need stuff like that.
But, yeah. We'll see.
I mean, I guess some of the navigation might require timing over distance.
I think that's why they set a stopwatch, because they one of the also the skills they recommend or tell you to kind of prep on is knowing how many steps you can take in a given amount of time, or, you know, what kind of your stride length and how much ground you can cover and that sort of thing. So I'm sure that's all part of it. So we'll see. I'll give an update, you know, after the fact, or I'm sure it'll pop up in pictures and on Instagram and whatever else. But it's a fun little kind of side dilemma or you know, something to think about leading up to this. But anyway, that's been life in my world lately. How about you? How did the happy hour go? That looked like a blast.
Dude, it went so well. You know, I had confidence having done these things before with you folks who are listening have always held us down. If we say we're going to throw an event, people show up.
Yeah.
And when you say there's great free beer and pizza, more people show up. Mm-hmm. And so we ended up having an absolutely amazing time. There were so many folks from the crew there. First dude down the stairs, take a guess.
Tom Place. who was masquerading just as me. I saw this video on Instagram where Tim Jeffries was going around and he asked his name and he said, I'm Jason Heaton. It was so funny.
I thought that was so funny. You know, this is a Tom heavy episode for one that doesn't include his actual presence.
Yeah, right.
But no, the event was amazing. We were able to go, I think Tim and I picked up 130 cans of beer.
Wow.
From Grotta, because they have the best beer selection. I only wanted stuff that was like made within 20 miles of where we were, like as local, high quality as possible. We had some stuff that was ungettable as well. If you're an IPA nerd, there was some really tough stuff to get that Frank at Grotta hooked us up with. You know, we started at 4:30, and by, I think it was probably 5:30, we were almost out of beer. So Matt and Braden, two of my colleagues at Hodinkee, just left and they came back with like, I think 90 or 100 more beers, just stuff that you could get cold at the local. But of course, it's New York. So also Sierra Nevada IPAs was great. And the pizza disappeared. You know, there was no way I was going to order the right amount of pizza. You have to do this a couple times to figure out what the number is. And everybody had a good time. We got really good feedback. The space is great. It was packed for much of it. And yeah, just a huge thank you to everybody from the crew who came out. Neil from Citizen was there, which is awesome. Yeah, we had a really nice time and got to do a proper hangout. It felt like something that we, you know, you make an investment of time and effort and planning and put these things together. And then Tim and I lug beer and ice and paper plates around Soho for an afternoon. And it was a beautiful day as well. So everything just kind of worked out. And it was nice to be able to connect with folks and see a handful. Next time we'll have to try and do like get the TGN folks in one side for like a group photo for the Slack. But
oh yeah,
I was that's my fault that didn't happen. But I was a little overwhelmed just keeping the party going and finding out that we had somehow gone through, you know, 140 beers in like an hour. So
all right, I'm gonna have to come to one of these future ones. That sounds like a blast. It looked great. Yeah.
I would love to have you out for one, and we could find a bunch of fun stuff to do around that as well. But yeah, it turned out nicely, and I have nothing but a huge thanks to the people who came out and held me down and said hi and shared their cool watches and all that kind of stuff. It's great.
Yeah, it looked great, and great great wrist check. Just so many people and so many watches. Really cool. All right. Well, anything else up with you, or should we jump into our own wrist check here?
No, other than that, man, we're just pre-writing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do have something fun for wrist check. When I was in New York last week, I bothered Neil from Citizen to check out a watch that I have been really kind of very interested in, because I think it offers something different than what we normally lean on, but at the same time fits a bunch of these markers, and it feels like a killer summer watch. And that's the new Tsuyosa Shore.
Yeah.
So I've got one on my wrist. It's the steel with the blue dial, and it wears better than I expected. The bracelet's quite nice. It's a split pin construction, so you know, sizing it's a little fiddly, but it's very easy to get it locked in. Has a little bit of micro adjust right in the clasp. And then the thing that really stands out is it's a very dark blue. In my office, it would look almost black.
Yeah.
Just sitting here. And then the decision for them to go with a larger handset and markers isn't that obvious on the website, but in person, it really wears and kind of presents like a full-on dive watch. It's 100 meters water resistance with a 120 click unidirectional bezel. Yeah. With 120 click unidirectional bezel. So you can definitely take it in the water, and I will this summer. The case is quite nice. It sits quite nicely. The crown tucks in really well at about 4 o'clock. And there's very minimal dial text. So you get Citizen at the top, automatic at the bottom, and that's it. The date's easy to read and see. I'm pretty impressed with it. So it seems like a lot more watch than I'm used to seeing for $495. And the other thing is in a world where you're listening and this might, you might be right at the starting edge of your watch journey, I remember the delight of buying my first few watches and then getting one that had a display case back.
Mm-hmm.
And these have a display case back. It's not something that I think all watches should have or need. And I do actually like the ability to engrave a watch as I become an older guy that's had a few watches.
Yeah, I think display case backs are great on watches at this level and then at the really high decorated level. You know, I think those are the two, because I remember that first Swiss Army automatic that I bought that had a display case back, and I was just mesmerized. And yeah, it wasn't anything special looking back, but it sure hooked me on mechanical watches. So that's kind of the point.
I'm straight up blanking on what my first display case back watch might have been. It might have been like an Invicta. I don't remember. Yeah. It's like something, it might have been something really early on that had a display case back. I don't think my red Beast, my Orient Red Beast, that one might have actually. I don't remember. I just don't remember. But it is a fascinating thing that is so easy to become indifferent to, or even a little bit jaded. Like I would say I'm probably more on the jaded side.
Yeah.
And like I don't want a display case back on my Pelagos or on the Explorer 2, for example. Mm-hmm. But on a watch like this, or like you say, if you go higher up where you're really paying for the movement.
Yeah.
I think it's part of the experience. And yeah, I think they've made another solid option. You know, I'm not a huge integrated bracelet sort of dressy, like, you know, I'm not in for the Tissot PRX, really probably not the type of guy to go for the standard Tsuyosa, but add the bezel. You know, it's not especially thick, but thanks to the essentially lack of lugs in the very short kind of lug to lug distance, the 12.2 millimeters for the style of the watch, I think balances really nicely. And when you add in the taper on the bracelet, the curve of the links and that sort of thing, it just wears, it doesn't wear necessarily like a $500 watch, or it wears like a very nicely thought out $500 watch. And the 40 millimeter case. Yeah. I'm pretty happy with it. Nicely done, Citizen.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool. And I think the integrated bracelet aspect of it kind of saves it from being just sort of another, you know, dive style watch that we see a lot of out there. And I think that it's just something I'm not used to seeing from Citizen. And it looks great. Cool.
Yeah. And what have you got on today?
Something different. Yeah. Mine isn't terribly different. I've got the CWN1. I'm, like I said, I've been test driving a few watches with an eye on the Defender Trophy candidates. This is right up there as we discussed. So yeah, haven't worn it for a couple of weeks and it was spot on time when I picked it up, which is why we love it. So that's what's on my wrist.
Yeah. I took one down to New York and at one point I realized that I hadn't updated the digital time on my Aqualand, which was also with me. I was like, well, that's annoying. So I was angry with myself. And instead of like trying to figure it out while moving through the airport, I just took it off and threw the CWN1 on. And it was like to the second with my phone. I was like, ah, that's pleasing. So there you go. Man.
Yeah, we.
Oh yeah,
that's great.
Couple of nerds out there with their, yes, their quartz watches. But yeah. Look, we're into the final round, part 10. Who knows how many parts we're going to have for 2026? We'll figure that out just starting at the end of April. So I've now had, 10 opportunities to learn how to introduce this segment, and it's still going to sound like I'm making it up. If by chance this is your first ever time listening to a crew and A, our normal monthly Q&A is done with audio files that are recorded using the voice memo app on your phone and then sent in. That's part of the paid side of the offering, including the Slack. And the Q&A is kind of flips the whole thing on its head, where we take text questions from the Slack and make a public episode for it. So this is part 10 of that. And we're going to kick it off with a question from Analog Connection, who says, sometimes watches make you cheer up and put a smile back on your face in a very difficult or uncomfortable moment. What moment with which watch comes to your mind? Jason, anytime that a watch kind of turns around a bad mood for you?
No, I couldn't think of a specific example. I think what I have found is that having a favorite watch or just kind of a special watch on during, I don't say trying times, but potentially stressful situations can calm me a bit or kind of be reassuring. I guess I would put it that way. So one example is, you know, doing maybe a difficult dive or adventure, like the Fan Dance, you know, I was wearing the CWN1 prototype. And it was just kind of pleasing during my sort of physical agony of, you know, scrambling up Penny Van over and back, you know, to glance down and see this watch that just pleases me. Or diving the Hermes years ago, you know, deep technical dive, kind of slightly narked, trying to keep track of all these tanks that I was carrying with me, et cetera, to like, look down and see my Rolex Submariner ticking away on my wrist. It's just something reassuring that there's something that is kind of reliable and eye-pleasing and functional doing its job in a time when, you know, you yourself might be a little bit flustered. And that's kind of where I went with this question. I can't say it would have cheered me up, but I guess in some respects it did in those situations.
Right.
How about you?
Yeah, that's good. That's a good perspective on it. I took a little bit of a different spin. I couldn't think of a time where like a watch, if I was having a bad day, like one of my favorite watches would make me feel that differently about it. But there is a certain heady buzz, if you will, that you get from a new watch.
Yeah.
Or maybe one you haven't worn in a long time and you pull it out of the box or out of its case, and then you go about the day, and maybe you're stuck in traffic, and I hate traffic. Everybody hates traffic. And you look down at your wrist to make sure you're not late, and you go, oh, that thing's pretty sick.
Yeah.
Oh, that'll do. I like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was the first thing that came to my mind, is like whether maybe it's a new watch or you borrow a watch from somebody, just something where there's some novelty where you look down at your wrist and maybe it's not what your brain had initially, like if you thought about it, of course, you know what watch you have on. But otherwise, you wouldn't. Like, I guarantee there were times where I was probably fairly stressed in the last little while, looked down at my wrist to check the time, and like it's the aerospace.
Yeah.
Or I'm going about my day, kind of frantically doing stuff. I go to pick up my son, and I turn my wrist in just the right way and activate the minute repeater, and that's a delight. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I think that's maybe not exactly what Analog Connection was getting after, but that's how it would land with me.
Yeah. No, that's good. I like it. Thanks for that question, Analog Connection. That's a fun one to start out with. We'll move on to one from Adam Aldreet, who has a car-related question. I've been wanting to get a classic Sunday driver, but I'm not mechanically inclined. What are some of your recommendations for a somewhat dependable classic that you could take to a run-of-the-mill local mechanic and ample parts availability? To narrow it down further, preferences on my end leaned toward a small and nimble over a muscle or horsepower car, but can be swayed to anything that puts a smile on your face.
Should we say the answer together?
Oh,
because there's one natural answer to this. And it's so much that it's a meme in the automotive journalism world.
All right. Ready? One, two, Miata.
Yeah, it's a Miata. Just buy a Miata,
yeah,
and you'll be happy.
Yep.
You've had one, Jason. Yeah. I've looked at them several times. You had a third gen?
Yeah. Yeah. With the, it was the retractable hardtop.
NC?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Okay. Yeah. I've driven an RF, which is the fourth gen with the retractable hardtop. I had one of those with Sarah, you know, whenever it was the last time we were in LA, a long time ago.
Yeah.
And you can definitely go other directions, but if you actually want the thing that you just listed asking. Maybe classic is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you wouldn't consider this a classic, but outside of it being, it is a classic option in a modern sports car for sure.
Yeah.
But the answer is almost certainly a Miata.
Yeah.
It won't leave you stranded. It won't cost you a ton of money. You can drive the wheels off it and really not get yourself in much trouble. I'd be more than happy. You know, there's definitely a couple automotive journalists. I think we actually have a question from somebody in that space coming up shortly. You could ask on the Slack. I wouldn't be surprised if everybody says at least one of the natural immediate answers is a Miata.
Yeah.
Plus you get to go top down.
Yeah. Yeah.
That instantly makes you feel like you're going 25 miles an hour faster. At least.
Oh, it's a delight. I mean, I think for a hobby car, having something you can take the roof off is just a nice bonus.
Yep.
Especially if you live somewhere where you have, you know, more good weather seasons than we do here. But even here, it's a great choice.
I mean, outside of that, if you're absolutely against a Miata for any reason, I still feel very strongly about the BMW Z4. But you will experience a different part. Availability won't be an issue. Cost will be different than a Miata, and service will be different than a Miata. Like having somebody else service it. I wouldn't want to steer you wrong. I would probably go for something like the BMW. I'm not going to drive it as much as you might.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea of the 6 and a little bit more power. I love, you know, I have a extreme fondness for the Z3 and Z4s simply because of my age. But yeah, I think the natural answer is the Miata.
Yeah, I think so too. I had a short list in a Subaru BRZ, GTI,
mm-hmm.
Acura RSX, which was a great car. I had one of those years ago. That was a fun car. S2000 Honda, you know, if you want a little riff on a Miata, but a different,
different faster
make. Yeah.
More high strung, you get the high rev, that sort of thing. I think, you know, I'm not going to be getting buddies here, but you have to make sure it matches your roads, and a Miata will match more roads than an S2000. Again, that comes down to length of gearing, where the torque is in the motor, that sort of thing. Mazda looked at all of these great British sports cars and said, well, we can do that and also remove all of the headaches.
Yeah.
And they made a car that was so ubiquitous that people don't often take it seriously. And then as soon as you get into racing, as soon as you get into like canyon driving, like any of the enthusiast levels of car focus, suddenly there's a lot of Miatas around. And that's for a reason. So thanks very much for that question, Adam. Next up, we'll get to one from Oliver, which is for me. He says, my wife and I are starting to talk about having kids in the next 1.5 to 2 years. James, we know you have your daughters, and I now have a son as well. And if you're comfortable talking about it, I'd love to hear some of your experiences about becoming a dad and preparing for the immediate changes that occurred, and then what it's like being a dad day to day now. And he said, I guess what I'm really asking is, what's your dad EDC? This is one where I could ramble really quite extensively. So I've just prepared a simple list. And I think TGM Parents, which Oliver does point out, is probably a good spot to expound upon this list. It's difficult for me to remember going from 0 kids to 1, but I can tell you what it is to do another very young one, as my son is 9 months old. And I would say, look, be ready for a new routine. And that routine will, the value of that routine will protect some ability for you to remain selfish. If you don't have a routine, you'll be kind of constantly overwhelmed. If you have the time, the space, if you're this type of type A person, if you have 1.5 to 2 years, I would say you might actually be a little behind the gun on daycare, schools, things like that. So get started. It pays to be years ahead of that schedule. But if you know for your job that you need a certain type of care, the faster you start to arrange for that, the easier it will be for you to make that transition in the moment when you're already kind of at 100% with everything else. This is a big one, and one that didn't factor in with my daughters due to their age, but one that I've noticed both in being a dad to a young baby in 2026, but also for my wife, for Sarah. Don't believe what Instagram tells you about being a parent or having a kid. Even if it's good advice, Instagram is a fire hose and you'll already be overwhelmed. And the one thing I would want to make clear, and this goes for absolutely everything, the only goal of Instagram is to keep you on Instagram. if they can use the algorithm to undermine your feeling that you're a good parent, and that means that you'll spend more time scrolling nonsense where 40% of it is just designed for you to have a certain reaction and scroll again, or 80% of it, that's what they're going to do. Don't trust any of it. Talk to people who have kids, people that you know and respect. Talk to your parents if you feel they were good parents. You know what I mean? A lot of the basics haven't changed. The tech has changed. It's gotten scarier. And the access to information, it's like being a parent now and going on the internet is like people diagnosing themselves on WebMD. It could be the most normal thing that could be happening to you, very common experience, and you will get the thing that keeps you on the website, the thing that keeps you clicking ancillary links, scrolling into the next video, watching the next YouTube short, whatever it may be. So that's a big one, is it sometimes just disconnect and trust your gut. And if you're not the type to do the gut thing, then talk to other parents. And TGM Parents is a good outlet if you don't have more options. The next one, if you're an internally driven, selfish type of person like me, so you have hobbies, maybe you have a gym routine, maybe you're a road bike guy, maybe you've got a Miata you just bought, and you're learning to service it yourself, et cetera, just prepare to share all or most of that time for the next little while. Your hobbies won't go away. Like Sarah and I know we'll get back to scuba diving, but we're not diving right now.
Mm-hmm.
And is that a bummer? Sure. Is it okay trade-off? Also sure, right? You can't just be the person who says, oh, this is all fine. You have to understand that, like, having a certain feeling about a certain thing, we've talked in past Q&As about the selfishness factor. And one, you have to be able to think about how you're thinking. It takes a little bit of metacognition. But also, you just have to be prepared to know that, oh, for the next little while, I'm probably not going to get a new PR on my 10K,
yeah,
or something like that, because your new personal record is how much sleep could you get, how much sleep could you make sure they get,
yeah,
right, and or how many walks you could go on with them on a nice sunny day, or that sort of thing. It's a change, and it's short term, and I think it's one of those things where there's a really unfair linear curve if your brain chemistry is like mine. Where at the start, it feels unfair because you're suddenly not able to keep up with the things you like. And that could be something like even movies or TV or books, or it doesn't have to be this like outward, you know, climbing mountains or whatever. But whatever you're into, it'll feel unfair at first because you're like, well, I'm behind on that. And then you'll get to the middle and you'll start to find that new routine that I mentioned, and you'll start finding time for these things. And then before you know it, you'll be at the other end of the curve and there'll be like four or five, and you'll spend more of your time like getting them to see their little buddies or taking them to school, and you'll start to readjust that, you know, like the elastic will go the other way on the other side of the experience, and you'll be like, oh, I kind of wish I had had a different perspective at the start.
Mm.
So that's something to be, if you can get your head around it again, it's a little bit of like, you have to think about how you think, which I'm 40 and I haven't ever really done it. So good luck, I would say. It's easier to talk about it on a podcast than do it in the moment. Be prepared to look tired in photos for a long time. That's more of a joke at me because I look exhausted in every photo now. Eventually that will change. And then finally, Oliver, for EDC, aside from maybe like a kid-specific camera, like if there's a camera you love to keep relatively on you, that could be your phone, of course, but maybe not. Aside from that, I didn't really change anything for my EDC. My kid, you know, like the kid has a diaper bag, and that's its EDC.
Mm.
No major EDC change. I'm sure there are intense sort of baby EDC things. Pretty straightforward. Most of their stuff is theirs, I would say. But yeah, hopefully helpful and hopefully not too much of a ramble.
Yeah, I'm wholly unqualified to answer this, so I won't even chime in on it. But I do think your point about a camera is kind of a little bit of a cheat or a little way in that you can still pursue a hobby and a little bit of kind of gear, a good excuse to kind of indulge that part of you. If you're feeling like you're leaving some of your hobbies behind or your own free time is, you know, James, you've still been able to do a lot of great photography. And I think a kid is like a great sort of subject, you know, obviously, I mean, and you want to take as many pictures and video and stuff. So to use that as an excuse to kind of hone your photography skills in a very different way, and maybe even pick up a new camera. It's a nice
take them to the zoo.
Nice idea. Yeah.
Lots of stuff to photograph at the zoo.
Yeah.
And the last thing I would say is if you have family that maybe won't see the kid all the time or getting a little bit older, one of those like digital picture frames has been an absolute winner in my family and in Sarah's. We use Aura, A-U-R-A. This is not not a SponCon in any way. They don't know anything about it. I think I actually used the code from Are You Garbage to get a discount. another podcast that I really like. But we've had a couple of those for a while. My folks have them. And then when you do take that picture with the camera, with your phone, whatever, you can pop it into the app. And it just shows up on there.
That's cool.
On their screen.
Oh, that's really cool.
The next time you talk about them, that's the first half hour. It's like, oh, we saw a picture. So at the zoo or that sort. That's great.
Wow.
Good tech.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks so much for that one, Oliver. Jason, you want to take the next one from Matt?
Sure. Yeah. Matt M. Writes in, if you could have a holiday named after you, happy Heaton Day, happy Stacy Day, when would it be? Boy, this is, it feels so self-aggrandizing to answer this. How would people celebrate it? What special costumes or decorations would they celebrate with? All right. When is your holiday for one thing? And how will people.
I was trying to think of when there isn't like an already a national holiday. And is this the sort of thing where like people get the day off? How hyped are we supposed to be about ourselves here? I would say, let's call it the last Friday in July. You take the day off work and you go on a hike.
Yeah. Yeah, that's nice.
Bonus points if during or after the hike you can jump off a dock.
Mm-hmm.
The agreed upon clothing is swim trunks.
Yeah,
and whatever you do for dinner. I mean, for me it would be oysters and that sort of thing. But you should have a couple of pints at dinner for me.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty easy. That's what I would do if I had a free day today for sure. How about you?
Well, as you were talking, I was like, that just sounds like a great. Maybe we should just skip the Heaton and Stacy days and just do like a TGN day. You know, and I love that idea of going for a hike and jumping off a dock.
Yeah.
Just a lot of the stuff we've talked about so often over the years. But yeah, for me, I think it would be summer as well. I was looking back at like, what date would I commemorate? And I think there's a date on, the first time I got dive certified, it was sometime in August. So I just kind of threw out August 15th. What do people wear? Well, you got to wear a bund strap on your watch, and I think, if you can go diving or at least snorkeling, get in some water somewhere. It's going to be a hot summer day, hopefully, least in the Northern Hemisphere. And then finish the day with a good whiskey. I think that should be, there should be like a commemorative, private label, white labeled, whiskey,
Orange Spot.
Yeah, right. There we go. Yeah. Orange Spot. Yeah. Good Irish whiskey. Something like that.
Yellow Spot's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, good question, Matt. Thank you so much for that one. That's a fun one. And I'd love to hear what, not for necessarily Jason or James days, that's kind of silly, but a TGN day. Let's do that thread.
Yeah.
And maybe we can pick a day and we all try and get an adventure, maybe some water time, maybe a good whiskey or a beer, and then share it on the Slack later in the year. That could be fun.
I love the last Friday in July. I'm already looking forward to that.
Right. Last Friday in July is one of the best days of the year. It has to be, as long as you're not working.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Good one, Matt M. Killer question. And yeah, I'd love to, let's agree upon what a TGN day is.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe there's five tenets. You have to go outside. You have to sweat. Extra points for water. Extra points if you call someone you haven't talked to in a while. Like have a little episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
Call and catch up. Talk about the weather. And then good food and drink in the evening. Right. Maybe that's the kickoff point, but I'm sure we can come up with some good ones and go from there.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, we've got one from Shane R., which I will summarize. His question is, he's wanting to build a core 5-6 watch collection. He currently has a Field watch in his Omega Railmaster, and he also has a G-Shock Casio as his beater. He said, if you were starting from this point, which watches would you suggest for a great, well-rounded collection? I'm interested in brands like Omega, Tudor, Longines, Grand Seiko, but open to create a more diverse collection. He lives an athletic lifestyle and just recently started diving. He leans towards sport watches and would love to know what we thought. So, Jason, I've got a couple suggestions. I'm sure you do, too. That might get him closer to 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to kick it off with one of yours?
Sure. I mean, I think the obvious one here is he recently started diving. He doesn't have a dive watch with his Railmaster and his Casio. So I'm, I kind of zagged a little bit. I was initially thinking, get yourself a Tudor Black Bay, which kind of also gives you that sort of classic Rolex Submariner look. You can't go wrong with a Tudor. So if that if that does it for you, you can't go wrong. But I was I was thinking more in the lines of a Longines. The new Hydro Conquest is looking really good. Mm-hmm. Longines is such a solid brand, great watches. Or looking back at my early days of collecting, you know, I picked up the first generation Legend Diver when that came out. And I still regret getting rid of it.
Someone at the
watch.
Airport the other day.
They're so good and they're so cool because they're kind of dressy. They're very different looking. They don't have that traditional dive watch look. And they're really well made, and yet you can take it diving. I just feel like that would be a really good one to add to the collection along with the Railmaster so far. Yeah. I had a couple others, but why don't you go?
Yeah, look, and not knowing the budget, a Tudor 58 jumps to mind, kind of just a great buy once, cry once, wear it for a really long time, good dive watch, but also flexible for other stuff. Really, though, that's a lot of cash.
Mm-hmm.
A CWC Royal Navy Diver, I like them in a very similar way to the way I like a Tudor 58. They just wear really well. If he has an appreciation for Omega and Tudor, then I think CWC, you know, with the sword hands, the rest of it will fit right in.
Yeah.
And the quality's great. And if you wanted that to also be the quartz option in the five or six watches, also you could go the quartz route as well there. I also mentioned Hydro Conquest, but the GMT from the now previous generation, or I think the GMT is still the current, but it wasn't updated in the same way in the last couple weeks. They make the 41 millimeter Hydro Conquest GMT, quite a nice watch. That's a good one. And then I would say if you're looking for something a little bit more unconventional, I think we all know where I'm going here, consider an Aqualand, unless you find it just simply too big.
Yeah.
But that's, I mean, I would call that in this vibe, the sixth watch, but a great sixth watch. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Something more down the middle, but a little bit less conventional than, you know, MOD inspired dive watch or the Tudor would be a Doxa. Get yourself a sub 200T or a 250 GMT. A nice complement to the Railmaster, totally different vibe. And a fantastic, you know, maybe if you're diving more in a vacation context, a fantastic vacation diver. And you can get kind of as wild as you want. You could go Diving Star, Aquamarine, or you could go, you know, Sea Rambler or Shark Hunter to keep it a little bit more stoic.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. I also think he needs a chronograph. I think a chronograph would fit nicely in this. I think, you know, for covering bases here, I mean, to start over like this, it's a tantalizing prospect. And Railmaster, the Casio, a dive watch, and then, you know, something like a Zinn chronograph. I think Zinn is kind of one of those brands that, like, they're really fun to get into and discover early in your collecting, because they're just such a, still kind of under so many people's radars, and it's such a high quality, still reasonably affordable watch, and they're doing some fun stuff with chronographs, so I could throw that in there too.
Yeah, Seiko Speed Timers,
mm-hmm.
some really good looking ones in different colors available these days. There's definitely lots out there. I'm not your home for great recommendations on chronographs. I'm not sure I own one that isn't digital.
Yeah.
So there you go. Thanks so much for that question, Shane. Good luck on expanding that collection, and let us know in the Slack what you pick. I'm sure you can get, I don't know, 200-400 more suggestions with a thread on the Slack. So we could go down that road if you wanted as well. Next up, we've got one from Paul B, who says, comedians and cars getting coffee, but the TGN version. Who are you picking up for coffee? What car are you driving? And do you have any planned stops to get coffee? And when you do, what are you drinking? He said maybe we could go with one living guest and one from the past with an appropriately aged car, but he'd let us decide. Jason, who did you pick for your guest? And then maybe give me guest and car and road, and then I'll fill in on the other side.
Yeah, so I've got to plead ignorance here. I'm not up on current comedians, but one of my favorites from the past is just the legend Robin Williams. I find him great. I think he'd be a blast to spend a day with and just cruise around with. And I also went with a little bit of an unconventional choice for vehicle because rather than a car, Robin Williams was known to be a really avid cyclist, and he collected old kind of classic Italian and French and, you know, kind of Tour de France level road bikes from, you know, 70s and 80s. And so I'm thinking we're both going to be out cruising around on old steel, you know, classic road bikes, you know, Cinelli or, you know, one of these great Campagnolo equipped old bikes. And we're just going to ride around. We're going to ride around the city and chat, and, you know, we'll have to figure out how the camera crew is going to follow us. And then if we're doing it here, I mean, bring them to Minneapolis. My go-to stop after a good ride is a place called Venn Brewing, which conveniently has both beer and coffee. And they actually do a really great stout called Choco Nut that is made with coffee in it. And I think we're going to go that route. I think we're going to go with nice. a good dark stout with some coffee in it. So that's my pick. How about you? Did you
love it?
Modern, or you got a couple of choices, or?
I went with an older fella, not a comedian. Mm. And in this case, I figured if it was really the TGN version, it may not be a comedian. It may just be somebody that we think kind of represents a few of the points.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't speak about him that commonly. There's a theme of this guy through a lot of the film clubs, through a lot of the sort of things that we like and enjoy, and maybe even a stylistic element. And it'd be Harrison Ford.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, he's just, he remains one of the coolest. He's one of my big style icons. Mm-hmm. So if I could convince Harrison Ford to come for a ride for me, I think a 246 Dino, somewhere on the West Coast, like maybe go up Highway 1 just for cruise, nothing really intense. And then I was thinking like, oh, you maybe take him to like a great California Cars and Coffee, good vibes or something like that. But then I thought, I mean, he's not known for being incredibly social.
Yeah.
So maybe not a big crowd. And I thought maybe what we do is you just drive up and you find something along the coast and just make coffee. Mm. You know, get a jet boil and an AeroPress and make a simple cup of coffee. There's also, of course, lots of, you know, if you're heading up out of LA on the one, you could definitely find all sorts of coffee shops and that sort of thing. But yeah, I think that's where I would go. You know, you could obviously talk about Blade Runner and Star Wars and, you know, Jack Ryan and all this great stuff. But then you could talk about his appreciation for Breitling, including the aerospace, his interest in aviation. Mm-hmm. It's all sorts of stuff. I just, you know, it's a guy that I remain incredibly fascinated with. And he just has such an incredible career, and he's been in so many good movies. And he's one of these guys that never kind of feels like anybody else when he's in a movie. Like it's a bit like a Denzel thing where like when you have Denzel Washington, no matter how good he is, he's still a little bit Denzel left in the portrayal, which I love.
Yeah.
And I think you get that with Ford as well. There's nobody quite like him.
Yeah. Yeah. Good pick. Yeah. He'd be great. All right. Thanks for that one, Paul. Let's keep things moving with a question from Rich H, who says, is your watch a representation of who you are, who you would like to be, or is it just a watch? Do you pick your watch to go with what you're wearing, or do you pick what to wear to go with whichever watch you want to put on that day, or is it a combination of both? James, want to dive in on this one? Where do you stand on this?
The older I get, the less it's an affectation. But let's be clear, there's no way for you to really do anything for you that isn't about you in some way. Mm-hmm. At least that's my personal philosophy. So it's still just a watch. And typically I would say that I might pick out a watch that matches the vibe of what I'm doing or wearing. But more and more, it just ends up being like a gut thing. Like I'll be dressed and knowing I'm going out to the zoo or going out to see some friends at a pub or something like that. And I'll just kind of pick something that matches whatever I'm feeling in the moment.
Yeah.
Sort of like a personality pick for the watch. But yeah, I would say that maybe when I first started out in this space, the watches were more of an affectation. And I can't say that they aren't now, because I don't believe even if you dress like Steve Jobs did, it's still an affectation in some way. Like even if you'd have a uniform, mm-hmm. it's still something, there's still something there that connects to you, your opinion, your taste, that sort of thing. So I would say that's probably the limitation there. But yeah, that's how I kind of feel it. Jason, how about you?
Yeah, I think your personality is very analog and digital.
Yeah, true, right?
I totally agree with you. I mean, I think, you know, it's hard to separate. I think watches like, you know, Blundstone boots or a pair of Fjällräven pants or whatever it might be, or the sunglasses I wear, you know, they're an extension of your personality. I think your style choices are just that. So you can't really separate it. And I guess when I decide what I'm going to wear, it does come down to activity. You know, if I'm diving or going for a run, or if it's a night at the theater or something, I choose differently. And that also goes along with the clothing and the weather. Night at the theater. Yeah, right. Then it's like something with good loom. So I guess that might not be a very different choice. But, you know, then if it's a drier activity, a more sedate activity, I might pull out the 50s Navitimer, because I don't have to worry too much about it getting damaged or something like that. But I think
that makes sense.
Yeah, I think everything you said is, I concur with, and that's where I land with that one. And then Rich has a follow-up question on a different topic. He says, have you ever bought a watch because of someone you have seen wearing it, either in person, TV or film, or even possibly a brand ambassador? We've had kind of a version of this question before, whether brand ambassadors have influenced our choices. I don't recall what you said about that, so why don't you tell us?
Yeah, I mean, the best example for me is my Explorer 2. The interest in that watch was initially spiked by Ed Wieser's mention of a white-faced Rolex that he got when he became connected with the brand. If you've read No Shortcuts to the Top, it's a kind of a cursory part in the greater story of that book. And that kind of put that watch more on my radar. And then later, and we've talked about this before, there was a YouTube video of a gentleman driving what my memory tells me was a red E46 M3 on some sort of a mountain pass. And he was wearing a 16570 Polar like mine, or at least a watch that looks very similar to that, on a gray NATO. And that kind of pushed me both into the appreciation of the gray NATO thing and especially on that watch. So yeah, I've definitely been influenced in some metric, and I'm sure there's four or five other examples over the years for sure. How about you, Jason?
Yeah, the best example from my own collecting history was my very first kind of high-end piece back in 07, I would say, maybe 08, after seeing Casino Royale. That Planet Ocean, the big 45 millimeter one on that rubber strap, was just such a revelation, such an eye-opener for me. And I remember going to Jared Jewelers, you know, in the mall, buying it on store credit, and just being absolutely smitten with that watch. It still kind of blows me away. I still think high-end watches on rubber straps still give me a little bit of a thrill, even after all these years. And this kind of goes to the next question that we'll get to. But yeah, that's probably the best example. I can't say I've done that since, but as I've said in the past, in terms of brand ambassadors, you know, Mike Horn still, you know, he's still for my sure beating heart, like a bit of a man crush there. And his longtime relationship with Panerai, I could see one day kind of head in that direction, kind of based on his use and wear of them. But no, so far just the Planet Ocean.
Nice. Well, Bond's got a draw, right? That's why he's one of the great ambassadors.
Yeah.
Good questions, Rich H. Thanks so much for that. Next up, we'll close with one from Headers, who says, having grown up being obsessed with cars and then ending up driving them for a day job, I now find myself entirely tired and jaded by the whole industry. Have you ever found yourselves emotionally dry and washed out with the watch industry? What tips have you developed to either reignite the passion or cleanse your palate before you reach this point?
That's a good question. Wow. I've experienced this.
Yeah. I mean, you largely pulled back, right?
Yeah. I mean, I write about watches pretty rarely now. I wrote something on my Substack last week. It was the first time in a long time, and I've, you know, got some stuff coming up, but, yeah, I think for so long, you know, I was so kind of associated with dive watches and diving with watches, and I don't want to say it ruined them for me. I still have a great love for dive watches, of course, and most of the pieces I own are dive watches, but it kind of falsely or artificially put me in this track that sort of made them, I associated them so much with a project or with work, and I did that also with dive trips. I so rarely went on dive trips just for a holiday that they kind of just became all about a project, and I almost relished the idea of not taking dive gear and just going snorkeling somewhere and just sitting on a beach. But I think the way I've kind of worked around this is, well, A, kind of pulling back and branching out a little bit in my writing, but also lately I've been revisiting kind of other genres of watches. You know, I'm wearing this Mono Pusher chronograph today. You know, field watches, chronographs. I can't say I'll get too deep into dress watches, but it's just kind of a rediscovery of genres and categories that I haven't paid much attention to in the past. And that I've found that to be kind of refreshing to kind of branch out a little bit in my own collecting and interests. You're in the thick of it. I mean, especially not just in your job, but also this time of year with Watches and Wonders coming up. Mm-hmm. Do you experience that kind of level of burnout?
All the time. Yeah, all the time. I think I fight it basically constantly for the last couple of years. Headers, you know, without knowing the full context, I'm going to make some assumptions here, and they're based in my world, so I'm projecting, I suppose. You have to decide, do I not like this, or do I not like the way I'm doing it? Mm-hmm. If you don't like it, that's fine. Things come and go in your life. There can be a fit. Like, I had a phase where a huge portion of my life was following cars. Now I basically just follow a couple YouTube channels, and I read Intercooler. If it happens outside of that sphere, I don't really know about it.
Yeah,
but there was an era where most new cars I'd read about them. Mm. I just, you know, I've transitioned away from that, and I don't get to drive that many anymore. It is a huge treat when I do. The for watches with me, it's complicated because there's just days where it's just work. And sometimes those days become weeks and months. And you go like, do I even like this? Like, do I even like watches? Right.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's kind of different than what Jason said, which is kind of explore the breadth of the operation. My only tip that works for me is I have to kind of go back home. I've gone too far.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen too much of the world. I need to go home.
Yeah.
And I just go back to a watch that I know I love and an experience that I like. And usually for me, I find that I kind of become more and more burnt out and jaded. And then the summer comes and I put a dive watch on and I go jump in the lake and everything's okay. And I think you remove the complexity, you remove the stale context, remove some of the hype, remove Instagram from the equation and just kind of go back to home plate. Yeah. Like there's still a real delight to a Citizen NY040 or an SKX 007. Or I saw a picture the other day on Watch You Seek of Orient Red Beast, which I've now mentioned twice in one episode, clearly on my mind.
Yeah.
So, a delightful, hilarious watch that I wouldn't rebuy, but I'm just delighted to see it. I definitely struggle with this. And I think for me, and maybe from what you're saying, it's the work layer that sometimes is so takes over all of it. And there's no room left for the nerd curiosity, just enjoying the experience. Like if you have enough going on, and I certainly know lots of automotive, you know, people work in the automotive space who can barely enjoy what they're some amazing experience they're having during the day because they have 25 other things to do, and then they're flying to another spot to do this, and you have to kind of pick your ability to live in that moment and enjoy it. But I can totally understand where sometimes things, even really good jobs, just feel like work, right? It is what it is. And I think that's why you need a vacation. You know, to quote a great movie, you need a vacation from your problems.
Mm-hmm.
What about Bob? And I think, the burnout side of it is always on the horizon, and you just kind of have to remember why you do it. And if there isn't a reason, maybe it's time to start focusing on something else.
Yeah. Yeah. I recall the, statement that Ben Clymer told me many, many years ago. He was kind of just getting into kind of his car collecting era. And I remember him saying it was just fun to be a civilian at something, because I think he was so embedded and deep in the watch space, still is obviously, that to do something in a community or in a genre in which, you know, you're not as well known, and maybe you're a little bit more naive about, or you're just kind of discovering, it is a refreshing feeling. And it reminds me of, you know, I studied English lit in college, and every book we read was an important, quote unquote, important book. And, you know, you had to analyze it for themes and metaphors and things and author's intention. And it kind of soured me on reading for a long time. You know, this was many years ago, but to kind of discover the genre of kind of pulp fiction or thrillers, adventure thrillers and things was kind of this guilty pleasure for a while. And it kind of rekindled my interest in reading. And I think the same goes for this. I think if you find another hobby that's maybe adjacent to watches, or maybe it's even something like, you know, you pick up a hobby within the hobby of like watchmaking, you know, maybe you take a class and you start to learn how to build a watch instead of write about a watch exclusively, or a car or whatever it might be in your case, can be a good strategy as well.
Yeah, a project car could be the solution. Yeah, for sure. I think that's good advice all around. You know, everything has to have a flow. I don't want to sound too mystical here because I'm not, of course. But everything has to have a flow. Things come and go, and you can't always, you know, let's go to a car scenario. You can't always be on the gas.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes you got to be on the brake. Sometimes you got to be parked. Mm-hmm. And it's easy, even with the great opportunities and great experiences and amazing jobs and work that no one in other parts of the work sphere wouldn't think of as work, it's easy to find it to be too much and not always fun. And you have to manage, you know, your braking zones and such. Good question. Thanks so much for that.
There we have it.
I don't know how many questions that was in the end. We'd have to go back and count, but it was 10 episodes. I don't know if this has to become a special series in 2026. I'm not really sure. That's a lot of episodes. It felt daunting to get through all of the questions.
Yeah.
Hopefully we didn't miss any. And if we did, you will have an opportunity in April to re-ask. And then we'll dip back in whenever we need a little bit of help with an episode. Normally we wouldn't do this many kind of crooners stacked up. But we know once April comes, we have obviously all of the new watch season. We have a couple wild guests, really, really good guests that Jason and I are super pumped about, that we start recording as early as next week. So yeah, it's an exciting time, but we wanted to kind of clear the decks and you know, otherwise, you know how I can be, we would start the 2026 questions in August. Right. This way we can start them in April or May and have a good time with it. So thank you so much for everyone who put a question in that thread. And if you're listening to this and would love to be part of these conversations, the rest of it, and you're not on the Slack, you can get in for as little as $5 a month. TheGrayNATO.com has all the details there. And we'd love to see you in the Slack, especially if you're keen on participating in fun conversations and offering up questions and that sort of thing. So glad to have 2025 wrapped up before 2027. There's a lot of questions. But hey, how about we get into some final notes?
Sure thing. I've got a fun one. This is from one of my mentors slash inspirations slash heroes, Will Steger, who is a Minnesotan. He's been a pioneer of Arctic and Antarctic travel, just an all-around amazing person. Will is currently 81 years old, and he's undertaking, as we speak here, he's done these solo expeditions every spring for a number of years. He took a couple years off for some health reasons, but he's back this year. I'll just read the numbers. For one thing, this is in Arctic Canada. And by the numbers, 800 miles,
whoa,
260 pounds of gear on three sleds, 1 7-foot, 8-pound whitewater raft, 60 days, 81 years of age, alone. So Steger does this trip where he gets dropped off somewhere in the deep wilderness, you know, with a bush plane or a boat or something. And then follows a series of Arctic rivers from above the Arctic Circle. And in the past, he's kind of finished at his home, which is just across the border in Minnesota up in near Ely. I'm not sure where he's ending this time around, but you can follow along on his website, stegercenter.org/2026log. And he files these daily audio logs via satellite phone that they post, and it's got a map, and he goes over the gear he's taking.
Wow.
He's pulling modified equipment that he's built, that he can navigate frozen rivers that are breaking up. His whole point is he wants to be on the rivers just as they're breaking up so he can paddle some of them, but then also if they're frozen, he can pull all of his gear. I just let that sink in. I mean, the guy's 81 years old and he's doing this.
Yeah. Okay, Will.
There was a video, sure, of him training in a park in downtown St. Paul. He spends some time in the Twin Cities during the year. He had this old pickup truck, and he was in the parking lot, and he's throwing this big tire off the back of his pickup truck, hooking it up to a harness, and pulling it around in the snow on a frigid day to train. You know, it's just such an inspiration, and it just cements to me, like, I have no excuse. You know, none of us have an excuse. I mean, this guy's, he's just incredible. So yeah, if you want a little inspiration, go check that out. Will Steger at his website with the log from his expedition. It's pretty cool.
Good one. Yeah. That's super incredible and really makes my pick kind of ridiculous, but I'm okay with it. This one's not even you don't even have a link. This is a suggestion, a thing to add to your life if you didn't do it. It's now the end of March. Theoretically, in our part of the world, snow should be largely gone. Get a bird feeder. I put mine out the other day. I make coffee and I can look out the window while the machine runs. And there was a little cardinal on there this morning.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, $20 to have essentially like a pet that you don't really have to care for. There's a bird showing up. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. My grandma got me, like, we have a bunch of these ones that like are a game, like will fight off a squirrel. But the squirrels figure out how to disconnect them and smash them. So that one broke. So now I have a new one that's metal. And we fill it up. And then I always entertain the idea of like, oh, I should set up a camera on a tripod. And that way, if there's something cool, I would just be ready to send. But then it's just, you know, we're going to trip over a tripod in the kitchen or something like that. So, but yeah, it may sound like a silly thing, especially if you watched Listers, one of our favorite picks of any video from last year. I'll include that in the show notes. Why not? It was great. Overlooked for an Oscar, as far as I'm concerned. about the two brothers that go searching for as many birds as possible and to do what's called a big year. But yeah, a bird feeder in your backyard is a delight, and it's the right season to kick it off, and you'll see lots of cool birds. And if you spill some seed on the ground, you'll get maybe chipmunks and rabbits and all that kind of stuff. So it's fun.
Yeah, that's a good pick. That's a really good pick. I love birds, and I think they're so overlooked. To be surrounded by this nature, I mean, to just sit out in your backyard and have these wild animals that are just so exotic in many cases, and just it's so cool. I have the Audubon app on my phone, and it's, I know there are a lot of good bird apps, but the Audubon app allows you to kind of not identify the birds by the song. It doesn't listen, at least the version I have doesn't, but you can play a bird song to kind of match it up with what you're hearing. And I have used it, and I've played it like loudly, and it will actually attract birds, like especially certain birds. Like if I'll play the cardinal call on my phone at the volume really high, I'll get kind of curious cardinals kind of coming and perching nearby and like wondering,
what is that?
What is this big person? What is this going? What's going on here?
Yeah, we use the Audubon at the cottage, and I think the one that we have, or maybe it's the one from Merlin Bird ID, the Cornell one.
Oh, yeah.
One you can just like, my daughter will just be out for a walk and she'll just press record.
Yeah.
And then it listens the whole time and then gives you like a little report of all the birds that you heard.
Wow, that's amazing.
All right.
All right. Good big episode. Yeah, fun. Glad that we got through the Slack Q&A for 2025. Onwards, we've got a couple of weeks off. Be sure to pay attention to the Slack for that the tournament bracket for the favorite episode of all time from the past 10 years of TGN. Thanks again to Jackson and to Tom for helping put that together. In the meantime, we will be off for the next couple of weeks with the Watches and Wonders and Defender Trophy shenanigans going on. But for now, as always, thanks so much for listening. If you want to subscribe to the show notes, get into the comments for each episode, or consider supporting the show directly, and maybe even grab a new TGN signed NATO and get on the Slack, please visit thegraynato.com. Music throughout a siesta by Jazzar via the Free Music Archive.
And we leave you with this quote from Kurt Vonnegut in his book Mother Night, who said, "There is nothing left of him but curiosity and a pair of eyes."